Anybody want to talk about Kobe?
What?
What?
Okay, good afternoon again. And Lewis Gillingham is going to hand out some letters we've received. I should say this is really a high-intensity issue ever since February 5th or so, when at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, Michelle Duvall, who's the chair of the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council and also sits on the ASMFC, indicated that the 2015 harvest was well above the allotted, what's called an ACL, but we're just going to call it a quota for right now. As a matter of fact, some of the things I mentioned will be reinforced by Lewis, but in 2015, the quota was... come to the aid of
the FM. Should have used the circle hook.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, I'm about to tell you there was a 630,000-pound quota for the stock that is defined from Georgia to New York. Practically speaking, that stock is Georgia to Virginia. The other stock is East Florida, all the way around into the Gulf is the second stock. So
why?
There are lots of information.
Rob?
Yes.
Why?
Two reasons, genetics and the compatibility of data is my understanding. It's not clear cut which one had more emphasis. So you have the two stocks. I think one of the contentions is that split that happened in 2014, if it hadn't happened, what we'll be facing right now, but then you have to figure out what Florida would do and add that in. We were just under 2.5 times more with our harvest in 2015 than the ACL or quota. So you have a couple of letters there. This is really high intensity. You have Congressman Whitman writing both to NOAA, to Eileen Sobeck, and also writing to Michelle Duvall, who is the chair of the South Atlantic Council. You also have a situation where Bob Beal has written a letter, or been written a letter by Michelle Duvall, asking that COBIA somehow be included in the ASMFC management frame, because right now it is not. And the analog to that is that I have lost a little bit of track, but maybe a dozen years ago, Red Drum, which had been managed by the feds, was handed over to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. We don't expect the South Atlantic to relinquish, their hold on COBIA, but it would be good to see the Atlantic States have some aspect of management as well, because, for example, there are no shares of this Georgia to New York quota. There's no allocation based on state. And that was pointed out at a meeting. There was a meeting at the South Atlantic, and that was held on March the 10th. And a number of folks in the audience probably listened in. I and my staff listened in. One point of contention, since I'm just doing the overview, I'll hit some points in the overview. One is that Virginia did not have a representative down there. And that is true. But we did have the Mid-Atlantic Council vote, who was down there by the name of Dewey Himmelwright. So he represents the Mid-Atlantic Council on those issues. It's actually part of the Mackerel Committee. So he was there. The other point of contention was that North Carolina seemed to be helping us out, and that's true. During the meeting, Michelle Duvall and I were hooked up by way of email so that at least we could keep a live conversation going as the meeting went on. All of that might be perceived as window dressing, because when you think about it, this is a serious situation. We have many people who don't like the data. We did not create the data. In fact, the way the chain goes, it goes National Marine Fisheries Service, South Atlantic Management Council, VMRC. You know, we do not have the same input that we would have, so I agree that it would have been nice if Virginia had a bigger input, since we had 47% of the 2015 harvest from Virginia alone. So out of that 1.54 million pounds, which was the harvest, we had 47%. When you look at it, North Carolina by itself reached the quota. Virginia by itself exceeded the quota. Together, you can probably guess, is what contributed to the nearly 2.5 times the quota. I would like to say that it gets awfully technical. There's something called an accountability measure, and all that means is if you go over a quota, there's going to be some system in place that ensures that that doesn't happen the next year around. In the case of cobia, the accountability measure was already set up in November of 2014, and it more or less says that if the harvest is over in 2015, there will be a season closure in 2016. As of now, that closure is listed as June 20th. You know, that's been around for about a week as to when that would close, if not a little more. And the National Marine Fisheries Service put out a bulletin announcing that closure. That closure can be modified based on the input of the states in the Georgia to New York stock who decide to do conservative management. Unfortunately, what we're learning is that it would take a lot, based on the type of data that we are looking at, to do a whole lot. So North Carolina jumped out, went from 2 fish to 1 fish. We've been at 1 fish for the recreational fishery for quite a long time, and North Carolina went down to 1 fish. It gave them an extra 2 days or so, I think. So that's what they gained from going down from 2 fish to 1 fish. There have been calls here early on, back in February, do anything that we can do so that we can have some season in 2016. And I'm going to go over that in a second, just how that looks. But first, I also want to mention there's parallel tracks here. While the South Atlantic Council meeting was going on, they were talking a lot about framework. Framework this, framework that. What they were doing were indicating that for 2017 and beyond, the plan for COBIA, the amendment, the South Atlantic plan, is going to be frameworked. It's going to be changed, and it's going to have conservative management built in. That's what all the framework talk was about. On the side, we were saying to Michelle Duvall, why don't you look at these size limits, increase the size limits incrementally up an inch. We could definitely maybe gain some headway that way. Put a boat limit on. Maybe we could gain some headway that way and not have a June 20th closure. The third item was to start the season June 1st instead of, you know, just letting it start, which is typically probably the 15th to the 21st, somewhere in there, when you really start to get your cobia here. So we were doing that, but everyone should know it's not as if 2016 is going to have a very tight management. It's more that the following years are going to have tight management as well. That brings me to the closure of June 20th. National Marine Fisheries Service told us, and I should say there are a lot of people involved here. Dr. Neal and I have exchanged many emails. Wes Blow and I and Dr. Neal and others have exchanged many emails. I'm going to cover FMAC when I finish very briefly. There has been keen, I'd call it acute, interest in this problem because it has been a real bonus for Virginia for the recreational fishery. So everyone has had something to do. Everyone has had something to say. And my main objective is to make sure that we are all saying the same thing by April 26, which we're going to recommend when we finish up today as the public hearing, because we're not in a dire need to do anything today. That's why we have a discussion, but we do want to do something before May 1st, and that would be April 26. So what the National Marine Fisheries Service says for the June 20th closure, it corresponds to Virginia having landed, projected landings of 120,000 pounds. So that is what is expected to occur in Virginia by 120,000 pounds. As our expert fishing public knows, this is a rolling stock, that we're the last ones in the block, essentially, of any significance that is able to fish on cobia. So North Carolina, for example, likely will not be doing anything until after May 25th. That could be a problem because they did very well last year and essentially caught the quota by themselves last year. There's lots of what ifs, I'm afraid. Some of them have been put to rest. Private boat anglers are responsible for 91% of the 2015 harvest. So you have three modes. You have your charter, you have your private boat, and you've got your shore. Now, one of the big problems with everyone is that we wish they would have sampled instead of intercepted, more charter boats, because very few charter boats were sampled. And Ryan Jorley, who you met about 2 months ago, has been working up data, and we already knew that having a three-fish boat limit wouldn't really gain us any savings, because the intercepts, the way they were done, the boats that were intercepted, the charter boats, that's essentially the most they had, and 2014 was a little worse. So I think when people talk about the data, we are talking about MRIP, but we now have MRIP here in the agency, and you know, it has been tough to get the right data, but at least we have the benefit now of when a private boat or a charter boat comes to the same site, the same landing, both can be sampled. That didn't occur before 2015. So we have some advantages. I think the idea of the commercial fishery has been brought up a little bit. You may hear that. We heard it at FMAC where there might be a run on commercial hook and line licenses. Well, we have 200 commercial hook and line licenses under limited entry. And we know there have been some that have been obtained, but it's not as if it can be a run on it, because you're bound to have 1,000 pounds of seafood sales in 2015 and 14 just to be eligible to get a transfer of that license. That's been set up that way a long time. Plus, the commercial, just to give you the data, was estimated 85% of its quota, the commercial quota, which is roughly not quite 43,000 pounds on a 50,000-pound quota. The situation, which has really come to my attention at lunchtime, so I'll jump to that, is we finally have received, and it didn't take a whole lot of time since March the 10th, we've received the information from National Marine Fisheries Service, and I think this at least will all propel all of us towards April and the April meeting. So we asked for the fork length to be raised, and roughly we're at a situation where we have a 33 fork length. We use total length, that's 37. So there's equivalencies. But we looked at raising 33 all the way up to 37. Does not give any extra days. No extra days. Now, the extra days are stock-wide, Georgia on up. So we have no extra days. The closure date would still be June 20th. If we went to a vessel limit, that's the best we could do if there was some reason to go to one fish. If you went to one fish on the vessel, you gain 5 days. June 25th would be the closure. That's the best that could happen. So it's even a little more negative than anyone expected. And I think the situation is that if you do a combination of raising the fork limit up to 37, which is about a 41.5-inch total length, and you go to a vessel limit of 1, you get 6 days beyond the present June 20th closure, 6 days. Now, again, keep in mind what I said. 120,000 pounds is already figured in for Virginia by June 20th. North Carolina is going to catch fish. South Carolina, Georgia, they're all going to catch fish, and they're going to catch fish first, cobia first. So this idea I mentioned earlier of getting the ASMSC involved is the road to the future, where at least we can, you know, politely argue over shares, allocation, which are probably going to be needed, because once this framework is done for 2017, it's going to be pretty rough on our fishery. So I'm swimming, as many are, in information. I really am, and it's not a bad thing, but I do have to say one of the biggest questions has been, well, what should the commission do? And this will come up again in April. So the closures in federal waters for June 20th, but that closure includes state waters, harvest. So it's a projected closure, which is not just about federal harvest, which was only 18%, and state waters was 82% of 2015, when the projections were done by National Marine Fisheries Service just for state waters and federal waters. So where are we knowing that? I mean, it's not quite the same as saying this is simply a federal closure in federal waters, and you know what? We have no obligation. Well, on the contrary, the obligations are twofold. One obligation is we can be preempted. In other words, the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act does have the clause that it can preempt states' authority and impose the management. Does the National Marine Fisheries Service want to do that? No. Do we want them to do that to us? No. Would that be an easy task for anybody? No. It'd probably take a year or a little bit longer to do that. The second scenario, and you can see where I stand at least today with advice, the second scenario is that we're in a South Atlantic plan. Cobia is part of the South Atlantic plan. It wasn't too long ago, 2005 and 2006, that blue line tilefish were a real concern here because it was starting to be a pretty good emerging fishery, and there were rumblings that the South Atlantic Council, through I think it was Amendment 18 at that time, was going to severely hinder our ability to have a fishery. And a former commission member, Rick Robbins, and also Jack Travelstead, a former commissioner, worked pretty diligently and staved off that event. And right now the Mid-Atlantic Council is going through a process to develop its own management plan for blue line tilefish. So the message is, think about what inaction spells to the South Atlantic Council if the other states are taking action. South Carolina and Georgia close when the federal waters close. North Carolina hasn't acted yet. I can't tell you exactly what they'll do. But let's face it, next month we're going to have these same issues. And the biggest issue is, I know we have congressional support from Congressman Whitman, but I also know how the system works sometimes. And maybe we should be thinking forward a little bit, even though we can't stand the taste of what's going to happen in 2016, because the problem is going to be that inaction, and I'll say this again in April, means that whatever our harvest is in that Georgia to Virginia, for all practical purposes, is in 2016, that's just going to make the quota in 2017 that much smaller. Right now, I said to you earlier that the quota, the ACL, was 630,000 pounds. It's set to go to 620,000 pounds. But because we had an overage, a large overage, we go by what's called an ACT, annual catch target. That's even lower. That's 500,000 pounds. So in 2016, what the Georgia to New York stock is held to for harvest is 500,000 pounds. Purportedly, based on NIF survey, 120,000 pounds of that will be what Virginia is able to harvest, which is, you know, far less than some of our years that you're going to see Lewis Gillingham show you. But I think those are the important pieces of information. Again, I commend everyone who's been closely tied to this fishery and shown such interest that it's really commendable. I do want to say a little bit about FMAC. And, Lewis, I think you handed those out. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So FMAC had some interesting parts to it, and Dr. Neal was there and knows that's the case. And I think there were two calls to buck the feds. And I just went over at least a fisheries management view on where bucking the feds really gets you in a lot of trouble sooner or later. And I went over a lot about not quite a similar situation, but in the ASMFC, there's a public law as well, and that's been bucked by six states about four states at different times. One state had multiple trials there. The latest is American Eel, and all those states have to come into compliance because the penalties are pretty harsh. So bucking the feds was the comment at the end of the night by a couple people, and I understand that. I mean, I do understand that, but I want to present the information this month as well as next month about what you can expect if you buck the feds. I think there were questions about the data. There's been a lot of questions about the data, but this isn't novel for MRIT. So, you know, we've had these questions before with summer flounder. We've lived through these questions with striped bass. A lot of times in that little room over there when we had standing committees. So we've lived these situations for many years. MRIP, of course, is the collection and also effort. So harvest collection, effort collection. And, you know, it is changing, it is improving, but, you know, there still are questions. I think overall, the allocation system was raised, which I raise now. That was raised at FMAC. That seems to me to be something I hope will be favorable if we can get the ASMFC aboard, because that makes sense. You get to have a piece of the turf, and you're responsible for ensuring that you stay within whatever the limits are. There are certainly some questions about the economics, socioeconomics. And, you know, that's understandable. I mean, and that goes from everyone who sells art related to cobia, right, down to charter business, down to tackle shops, you know, all the added aspects of a fishery that two out of the last 3 years, 2013 and 15, was a pretty good fishery. So, you know, FMAC will meet again on the 18th. Of April, and you know, we'll hear what they have to say and go over some more information. I think you probably heard most of what I wanted to let you know before Lewis did his slide presentation, his PowerPoint, and I think some of the data will stick with you that Lewis goes over to back up some of the things that I said. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Lewis, why don't you give us your medicine?
Give us the medicine. I hope this isn't going to be too repetitive, because a fair amount. Stuck it in there. I've got it on a flash drive, if that's what it comes to.
Go back where you were just sucking it out.
216.
Hit that.
Yep.
Is it 2000?
Oh, that's how I do it. Two steps. Okay, this is the apple of everyone's eye, at least for today. And it's just that's a beautiful example of Bacobia. It's usually when they get that size and that age, that stripe goes away. But in this case, it's just a beautiful fish, just under 60 pounds. You've already heard Rob talk about the conversion between fork length, which is measured from the tip of the snout to the fork of the tail, which is what federal rules generally are. And for Virginia, we use what's total length, tip of the snout to the tip of the tail, with fish laying flat. I just want to say, when I get to the end here, this will be a request for a public hearing to amend Regulation 4 of Act 20-510-10 pertaining to amberjack and cobia. This is what some of the information that's come in since your February briefing. This is the closure notice that was issued March 9th by NOAA. And as Rob mentioned, it closes the season in federal waters, and the states are expected to follow suit June 20th. And this is something that NOAA Fisheries is required to do to reduce the length of the recreational fishing season in 2016 because the annual catch limits were exceeded last year. The action is really designed to ensure overfishing does not occur. As we discussed, and I think you got wind of it last month, the initial announcement is really sort of a placeholder. And by NOAA, but it can be adjusted depending on states' actions. Fortunately, we found out today how little effect Virginia can have on modifying what regulations we had in place last year to affect this closure date. This now we have that information. NOAA did receive a number of combinations submitted to evaluate establishing a restricted vessel limit of less than one fish per person, combinations of increased size limits, and the impact of a closed period on extending the 2016 season. Where did last year's landings come from? Rob mentioned that the overall quota or total allowable catch limit for 2015 was 630,000 pounds, and North Carolina did exceed it slightly with 41% of the catch, but Virginia had 47% of the catch, and we exceeded it quite considerably, and with Georgia and South Carolina kicking in almost another 200,000 pounds. This gives you an idea of what it looked like last year, and this red dotted line is the ACL, which only existed at 630,000 pounds last year, 2015. But yet, if you go back for a 10-year period, you see that 2013, 2010, this is 2007, and 2006, the coastwide grouping now of New York to Georgia was exceeded. It's over 50% of the time, so this shouldn't have come as a surprise, particularly to the South Atlantic Council that adopted this. Meanwhile, Virginia had a banner year, but again, if you look back, how is this such a huge outlier? If you look back in 2006, we had a very similar catch. Where was it by mode? In other words, where was the catch made? Federal waters, 18% of the catch. And that's what the South Atlantic has jurisdiction over. But it is what we all know. It's a state fishery, 82% of the catch. What was the difference between 2015 and 2014, where we were way under the total allowable catch? Well, actually, the average catch per person from a directed trip didn't change that much. It's just slightly over a half a cobia per person. Now, how do you get a half a cobia? Well, you stick two people on the boat. One guy brings in a fish, the other guy doesn't. So there's your half a cobia. But we did see an increase in the size limit in 215 over 214. Remember, we were over the ACL, but it wasn't in place in 213, and that had a very low average catch weight. But here's what I alluded to, the directed trips. That in all likelihood, with the NOAA weightings of things, that is likely the real culprit. And that was about a 25% increase in directed trips. Now this kind of gives you a somewhat clear picture in what can Virginia do by modifying its regulations in terms of extending the season. Green is Virginia landings, black is North Carolina, the blue is a total. And you can see the first landings are made in March-April time period, probably from Georgia and South Carolina. North Carolina's catches start in the May-June wave, or wave three, and they peak in that time period. And with that June closure, you can see, just looking under this pyramid, where is most of the catch? Well, Virginia is here, maybe less than a quarter of the catch in North Carolina. And that's the total. It gives you an idea what we can really affect with anything we do to extend the season. And then the next month, that's where Virginia's landings really do peak, is July, August. For 2015. And everything pretty much comes to an end as you reach September. Who was catching the fish by mode? The shore landings, and you say, shore, who catches? Well, there are people in Virginia that have landed cobia, you know, while surf fishing. Probably Cape Point at Buxton is the one place, if I had to catch one from the beach, you'd have the best chance. But really, these landings are from piers, primarily. It's the private rental fleet, primarily private boats, that account for over 90% of the landings, and the charter and head boat group less than 8%. Now we heard at FMAC and at other meetings people talking, alluding to the citation data. What does it really tell you? The citation data is really more of a qualitative index. It's large trophy fish. It doesn't give you an idea how many fish are out there. If you looked at how many citation spot we had the last couple of years, you say, there's no spot out there. It's a lot of spot. But not many of them are reaching that large trophy size. The other thing, when you look at this, 2004 was a really, really low year. But that was the year where the minimums were raised from, it was 50 pounds in these years for a kill citation and 44 inches for a release. And the minimums were raised considerably. So the peak that you see here is probably an artifact of what the citation minimums were at this time. But if you look at just from 212 through 215, you do see an increase in the number of citation fish that are registered. And you say, well, is the stock increasing or is effort increasing? You run more trips, you're more likely to bump into that 55 or 50-inch cobia. That, I really had streamlined this because I know you're going to want to hear from folks or folks are going to want to talk to you, but I'll just give you the staff recommendation at this point in time that we are requesting a public hearing to consider adoption of higher size limit, a vessel limit, and a closed season for the recreational cobia fishery in 2016. I'll answer any questions.
Are there questions from the commission?
Still thinking about those oysters.
No questions from the commission?
Yeah, I have a question.
Mr. Tanker.
The data that we get, can you tell me a little bit about the questions that are asked to arrive at some of this?
The data that we get.
Yeah, on the number of fish caught. I think that there's one of the issues that I hear people talk about is, yeah, well, I caught a lot of fish, but I didn't keep every one I caught. how do we make the discernment between the catching and the keeping?
When an individual is interviewed at dockside, first thing is, did you folks go saltwater fishing today? Once they say yes, they'll ask, did you catch any fish? Yes, we did. Well, can I see them? They will, if allowed to, weigh and measure those fish. And then they'll also ask them, were there any cobia that you caught and released as well? Or whatever other fish, they're not looking. It's not a cobia survey, it's not a striped bass survey, it's not a croaker survey. It's a general survey that provides estimates for all fish that they interview, or all fishermen that they interview on what they catch. So yes, we do get released fish. We do get an estimate for released fish for all the species. And in fact, that estimate is used along with the hooking mortality in stock assessment work, because there is some hooking mortality, and in fact, that's come up regarding cobia at the South Atlantic. And they said, well, it's a pretty hardy fish. It's really pretty low, probably somewhere around 5%, which is very low.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Erskine.
I had a question about, and it follows along those lines, but so reporting. This is not mandatory reporting.
Nope.
So this is voluntary reporting.
Well, it's voluntary. It's, you've got an interviewer there at the dock. Now, this is for the dockside interview. This is where you get the fish that were caught, lengths. You don't get trip information, in other words, total trips. That's collected in another way. Right now it's still done by a telephone survey. That's in the process of changing. But it's voluntary in that you've got a person there, standing there with a clipboard, and he's got a little insignia on him, says he is who he is, says he is, and he's asking for your help. Can I interview?
So I guess as a follow-up question, but not really a question maybe, I know there's a lot of discussion about this.
Right.
We're going to have a public, hearing, if approved. However, it seems to me like we're working off very suspect science and data. I mean, for the commercial fishery, it's just a whole different ballgame, as you know. I mean, mandatory reporting, we have numbers,
And it's still self-reported data, but because the dealer checks, you've got a way to go back and check it. If you went with recreational angler voluntary data, you'd end up with something, I hate to throw the Saltwater Journal under the bus, but I mean, you'd end up with something like the Saltwater Journal, how many anglers are actually using that and self-reporting data. It's very poor. Unfortunately, one of the real problems with the MRIP survey and even prior, and this is the new MRFs or the redesigned MRIP, is you just don't get enough intercepts or enough assignments to get these rarer species like cobia. I mean, cobia is a relatively rare intercept a fisherman who has caught a cobia. Has it in hand. It's a relatively rare. When you look at the number of surveys, at the number of intercepts, they're working off a pretty small number, unfortunately. Now, something like spot, croaker, flounder, even striped bass does a good job. And it does a much better job. And there's a statistical estimate for standard error that can be measured, and it's assumed that equates directly to accuracy. But
okay.
You can't, and that's one of the biggest problems with this. You never know how accurate the data was. I use the example, 10 years ago, summer flounder. Well, it's been 10 years, so how many did we catch 10 years ago? You don't know. You never know what the right answer is. So you can always say, I don't believe that number. It was higher or lower. That can't be right. Because you never truly know what the answer is. You can just use statistical measures to determine, how precise was this estimate.
Thank you.
Mr. Ballard.
Along those lines, can you speak to what Congressman Whitman brought up in his letter about, I guess, right after the 2012 assessment, they saw an outlier in the data. I guess immediately after that, there was a 400% increase in landings, and he's kind of questioning the data method there.
I think what he's referring to, by some of the calculations I've seen people do, that there was a 400% increase in COVID landings, and I think it was just for the state of Virginia between 2014 and 2015. And I went through that comparison, just, you know, back up in the slides, between, well, what was really different in 2014 versus 2015. And this is probably one of the biggest drivers of it, is this increase, 25% increase in directed trips. But we did see an increase. So here's 2014 average size of fish, which is around 30 pounds. And now it's up to 35 or a little bit more. So you saw those two increases. But the average catch per person really didn't change all that much. And that was one where I said, well, how do you get a half a pound, half a cobia? It was 0.12 cobia per person in 2014 and 0.523 per person. Now realize every one of these estimates will have this percent standard error around it. So you have to imagine it could be 40% higher, because I think last year, which the numbers were very good, the PSE for Virginia landings in 2015 were right around 40%. That means the estimate, which you see here, is right in the middle. It could have been 40% greater or 40% less. Now, if you take that same level and it wasn't as precise in 2014 and draw those outliers and see, well, there in fact is even likely even some overlap between, well, if the PSE was actually, I mean, if the landings were actually 40% less in 2015, whatever that number is in 2014. So I think, getting back to your original question, I think that's what he's referring to in his letter about a 400%.
As a follow-up, can you go back to the trip slide and the average weight slide? So the average weight's going up about 5 pounds, we think?
29 to 34.
Okay, so 5 pounds. And then the trips is about 50,000. Extra.
This is where it's not going to be linear. Knocked our heads about that, too. It has to do with the way when NOAA Fisheries creates these estimates, different intercepts are weighted differently. Individual intercepts are weighted differently, which is why you just can't go directly from, oh, well, it's 25% increase here and this much in weight, and there's your number. It's a lot more complex than that. And I'm not smart enough to explain it any better than that.
So. Well, I can explain in a theory better than that. If they're surveying a little used dock in the middle of nowhere and they interview three people, that certainly has less weight than the interview of a very busy dock that's got hundreds of people going through on a deck.
That's actually counterintuitive because it's the other way around.
Is that right? Well, see, now I learned something new.
In a busy site, you'll get a lot more interviews. It's a lot easier. You just will. But it's those real low-pressure sites that we've heard people complain about. Well, there's not many boats that use them, but their catch rates are very different.
There we go. Now I learned something new.
When you finally get one of those, they actually weight those sites higher because they're low-pressure sites.
Mr. Erskine.
I just wanted to go back to the slide, I guess, that you had the the standard error around 40%. Was that right?
Yeah, I just did it with my finger. But, yeah, percent standard error.
So we're talking about our standard error around this data is 40? Is 40?
And that was a good year for COVID. Yes. Now, this isn't all, that, it goes back to what I said. A COVID is a relatively rare event to intercept COVID.
So that figure, 718,647, is plus or minus 40%.
But it's, as Ryan explained, I think, the FMAC very well, you know, that what's in the middle, it's as you get out on the fringes of that 40%, it's less and less likely. There's not a, it's not as likely to be 40% higher as it is in the middle. It's far more likely it's somewhere close to that center.
Let me explain. If you looked at striped bass, you would be surprised it's up in the 30s. Striped bass is much more prevalent in our fishery. So the PSE proportional standard error is something that the management authorities, such as the councils or ASMSC, haven't lit on what is good for management. It used to be 30% when we had MRFs. MRFs has essentially been demolished, both analytically, the way it went, and the way it did its intercepts. So everyone's feeling their way with MRIP with these proportional standard errors. And the other thing, which Lewis mentioned, being both in between a high and low estimate, black sea bass is even worse when it comes down to that. And I know there have been arguments about, well, we really should take the lower estimate and use that, but it's never happened. It just doesn't happen. So it's surprising to me to see that proportional standard error at 39%, quite frankly, knowing how cobia is so unlike some of the other species that are with us for many, many, many months. So, you know, it's I don't see that as a weak knee. I see some of the other things as a problem. The charter sampling, things like that, you know, that's a problem. And that's going to shoot us in the foot. And what I really want to tell you, Lewis did his last slide. Put your last slide up, the recommendation. So Lewis did this last slide before we had this National Fishery Service information today, which tells us the best we could do if going with the NIMS closure would be to gain 6 days with a one-fish boat limit and a very high size limit. I don't think it's a bad idea to advertise this because there's a lot of, you know, folks who haven't seen it yet. But when we think about this practically, again, you know, in 2017 it's going to be conservative because they have to somehow say, okay, in 2015 it was 1,000,005 pounds. And now all these states have to come up with just 500,000 pounds. So you know it's going to be pretty restricted to start with. Some of the concerns, I didn't hear them at FMAC so much, but I've heard them elsewhere. We really want to put ourselves in a situation where we have to live with more restrictive measures, perhaps, than are going to come out of this framework, because the framework is for all the states, Georgia through New York. So just a little added something to think about, but I did want to mention this was before we, you know, we had this sort of surprising and, you know, disheartening information today.
Literally towards the end of your lunch break, is at least when I first saw the email.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Lewis. What I'd like to do is open the floor here for some folks that want to speak to the commission about this issue. First, let me say a couple of things. Let's have a civil discussion here. We're not your enemy on this. We know we're no more happier about this situation than any single one of you. We're trying to find the best path forward. If you want to come up and you want to rant and rave about this and, you know, feel better that you got on your soapbox, that's not going to be helpful. But if we want to come up here and have a civil discussion, I would very much encourage that. So that said, please raise your hand. I'll call on you. Let's get Wes Blow up here first, since he has been very active in this. And I'll note, I think you all can probably tell that staff has been working on this issue since the get-go. We're not coming to this late in the game, but it is what it is. Nobody likes this any more than you do. Ms. Blow, will you please identify yourself for the record?
Yes, my name is Wes Blow. I live in Newport News. I just like fish. That's it. I like fish for cobia. I have some papers that I'd like to hand the commission. And
thank you.
Is that enough?
Thanks.
Yeah. Let's go. Clearly, we went over last year. North Carolina and Virginia were the main culprits for that. There are accountability measures that they mentioned. I believe those accountability measures should be equally amongst the states, the burden distributed. That ACT is 500,000 pounds of fish, which is accountability measure they mentioned already, that we are, as the states from Georgia or Florida to New York, that's all that they're going to be allowed to catch. And when Michael Larkin did his calculations, that was the number he used to figure out the closure date. With that current plan on how it is calculated to be closed, it only calculates on when that number of fish will be met. And that number for Virginia, because of the date, we would only get 120,000 pounds of the fish. And that Michael Larkin sent me an email on that this morning. I had asked him what each state would get by that closure date. He didn't give me that information, but I'm estimating that North Carolina is going to get 345,000 pounds of fish to be caught. They were almost equally responsible for going over the overage. So what is not acceptable to me, and I would assume every person in this audience that is here for cobia, that North Carolina be allowed to catch almost three times as many fish for us that we can, and I would hope that the commission does not feel that that is fair either. I spoke with Bob Beal, the executive director of ASFMC, twice yesterday. I just want to read, I attached a letter that he sent me this morning in those papers to y'all. One of the comments he made in this letter that y'all have, under the current system, Virginia is not obligated to close on June 20th. Obligated to close their state waters. Further, he says, though, Virginia and other states will need to implement very conservative measures to ensure a harvest target is not exceeded. So, you know, Virginia can, in a sense, go against the federal closure when it happens. But we would have to do it in a responsible way. Like he said, the states would have to set up a plan that we don't, you know, completely go over the ACT. And I have also been in contact with Congressman Rob Whitman, quite a bit about different things. And just one thing that he texted me back, I just want to read it so that you can use this a little bit later in what I'm saying. His comment was, I hope that we can get National Marine Fisheries Service to think outside the box. That's the point I want to make, thinking outside the box. If they're in their management strategy, they claim to be constrained by Magnus Stevens. I do not believe they are as constrained as they claim to be, which I want the commission to think outside the box and don't feel like we are constrained as we believe we are. Mr. O'Reilly and the staff seem to have a big fear of not following federal regulations. But if we do it in a responsible way, that we don't go over the overage. I think it would be the correct thing to do, not to allow North Carolina to harvest almost three times more fish than us when, you know, they were equally to blame for that. Now, one of the problems there is that there's no allocation system set up with South Atlantic councils. That's not my fault, that's not your fault, and that's not the state of Virginia's fault. We should not be punished because they don't have a correct system in place, a fair system. On the front page that I showed you, or passed out to you, on the very right-hand side, it shows the percentages of catches. And then there's the handwritten stuff is me doing it. This other stuff is Michael Morgan's layout. It shows you where if the 500,000-pound ACT was split, it shows you the amount of weight that each state would get. Virginia, 210,000 pounds. North Carolina, 240. South Carolina, 26,650. And Georgia, 18,300. What I would ask the commission to do is set a Virginia season at 210,000 pounds catch to close. So when we met that 210,000 pounds of fish caught this year, we should close. And Michael Larkin could calculate that. You know, just because the other states, South Atlantic Council, doesn't have a share system, we should not be the one to suffer all the consequences. And if we adopted this, if we did this, that would be a fair way for Virginia to contribute to catching less fish. North Carolina should do the same. We can't control them, but we can control what we do. In my calculations, I would also like to see, you know, that season set using a 3-fish boat limit or one per person, whichever is less, with a 40-inch minimum total length and only one fish over 50 inches. If we don't step up and not just allow North Carolina to, catch three times as many fish this year, then, you know, it's going to happen year and year again. That's all I have.
We probably have some questions. I have a couple questions with that. Can I start this? It sounds to me like you're pretty much establishing what you think would be a fair quota for Virginia and setting our target at that, and when we would reach that, then we shut it off. I mean, that's our projection. I mean, that's what you're thinking. So you're thinking technically we go out of compliance for a while, but it'll take a while for them to catch up. Is that kind of what you're thinking, Wes?
Because...
go ahead.
You know, why should we only be allowed to catch 120,000 pounds of fish when North Carolina, under the current way, if we closed on the 20th, they're allowed to catch 345,000 fish? It's not our fault that South Atlantic doesn't have a share system. We shouldn't be, you know, cheated because of that.
Well, here's two concerns that I would throw out there just for consideration. If we come out of compliance here, I think we're going to be looking, whether it's June 20th or June 26th, it's so disheartening. We're out of compliance. We'll have to pay back whatever we go over. It seems very clear to me that the South Atlantic Council and Atlantic States Fisheries Commission are going to go with a joint management plan. They'll set up state shares at that point.
2018, probably.
Do we want to be in a position where we look like we have gone out of compliance willfully after being a great contributor to this problem as they perceive it and alienate the people that will be establishing what our quota would be under that scenario? I ask that in a rhetorical framework.
I believe that, you know, if the other states did the same thing, you know, North Carolina and particularly South Carolina and Georgia catch very few.
They're going to be in compliance because their closure date's going to match what the federal closure date is. So it's between us and North Carolina on who's going to be the baddest of the bad boys, isn't it?
Well, Well, no. North Carolina is getting 90% of their season with the closure that National Marine Fisheries has set up. They're not losing anything practically. You know, so why should Virginia suffer almost 90% and North Carolina get all of their season?
There's some other questions, Mr. Tanker.
So, and how do you envision trying to set the limit at 210 and then shutting the season down?
Michael Larkin could calculate that for you. Michael Larkin is with the National, or NOAA, and he's the one that did all these other calculations, and he could calculate those numbers. I even presented this to him, and he was going to suggest it, but you know, he had the state's calculations were more important to figure than mine. I didn't have enough horsepower to get him to calculate that. The state does. And so he could calculate these figures, you know, given a hypothetical share of the ACT to give you that closure date.
Okay. Can we let Ryan jump in here? Ryan's done some very excellent work helping to crunch the numbers and give us all a good perspective on this.
Yeah, I just think that, I think you were kind of getting at this, that it would be analogous to how he has already done, for example, the June 20th closure, is he would say, okay, well, Virginia's going to catch so-and-so number of fish per day, and this is when it will lead to. The only problem is his analyses have been done, you know, on a coast-wide scale up to this point, so trying to single out Virginia is certainly possible, but, you know, then we have to decide is 210,000 pounds, is that a reasonable number? You know, how is NOAA going to respond to us saying that? Because even if it seems fair in our guts, they're going to have to make the call on whether or not that was based on science or based on a fair distribution. Obviously, tracking it in real time would be darn near impossible because MRIP's two-month wave estimates are going to come out 2 months after the wave is over. A month and a half. And, you know, in general, what we would expect, you know, theoretically, of course, is that when fishermen realize they have a shortened season, you often see concentrated effort because they know. They say, I got 2 weeks to go out.
It's my last
chance. Even if it's overcast, I'm going to go out. Even if it's raining or, you know, you see just a little bit of concentrated effort because they know it's better than not being able to go out next week at all.
There's one other concern I have. I guess maybe it's not concern. I guess it would be an irony more than anything else for this Commonwealth of Virginia to ask the National Marine Fisheries Service to calculate with some degree of exactitude how much we can be out of compliance with their order. I'm not sure they would be very helpful with that. You see what I mean, Wes? We call Mike Larkin up and say, how many weeks would be out of compliance if we landed 120,000?
None. But if you ask for 210,000.
Or 210,000. Thank you. My dyslexia just kicked in.
What I would have done is ask him to calculate a share system for the whole East Coast is the way it should be done. And then that would be each state getting that amount of fish, and then that would give that state the closure date. And the other states should do that, and I'm saying Virginia would take that date and set it for the closure for Virginia. You know, we can't control what they do, but there should be a share system.
Mr. Zedrin.
Do you support a mandatory reporting for catches?
For a recreational fisherman? Mm-hmm. I think that would give you excellent information, but you will get bad data from it. The fisheries management already, and I've only been involved in a little bit of time, is based on bad data. You are not going to get recreational fishermen to give you correct data on that. I believe it would be 100% helpful, but what you would get would be 100% useless. We already have enough bad data right now. That's why we're here. So if it could be right, yes, but I don't think it would be.
Well, I'm following his question here. Then how, you know, you said, well, we're going to reach this 210,000 pounds. How are we going to know, or whoever's regulating this, when that is reached? I mean, how are we going to get the data to show that's reached?
Yes. Michael Larkin can calculate that number. If you ask him to calculate when each state would hit this number. He can give you the date, same way that you just got the date of June the 20th.
You would pick a date when the in-written numbers would say we would reach that.
It won't be exact. It's an estimated time that we would hit our quota.
Mr. Erskine?
Mr. Ballard.
Mr. Ballard.
One, I'd like to commend the speaker for actually coming up with a solution that seems well thought out. We don't see that a whole lot. Lots of times we get complaints without suggestions of solutions. I can't speak for the rest of the commission, but I think we all agree that a framework of a state share would be much fairer than the system we're in. What I'd like to do is kind of re-ask the commissioner's question to you, because I think you outlined very clearly that what we're doing is risking future years by doing something like that. And we have people in this fishery from age 14 probably up to age 80, and we've got to manage this for future generations. And are we risking retaliation for the next 5 years by pursuing a framework like this? I agree if the whatever body is deciding this would go to this system, that would be great. I don't think they're going to, and I don't think anyone does in before this season. So the question is do we as a state go out of compliance and risk retaliation, and are you comfortable with that?
I'm 100% comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with sitting down and accepting something that's completely wrong. To give North Carolina almost 340,000 pounds of fish and us 120, yes, at some point in time you have to stand up for what's right. What they are proposing is wrong. And if there's going to be some consequences down the road, I would accept them. But if you don't stand up at some point in time, you know, what are they going to do next year to us and the year after? So you have to make a stand at some point.
Mr. Erskine.
But with all due respect, your data is poor right now. So if you're going to say, and I think Mr. Zedron hit the nail on the head, if you're not willing to have mandatory reporting, I don't understand how you're going to get to a way that you can go to NOAA and the federal fisheries managers and say, this is the data we have that's reliable and we can manage around. Because right now, 210,000, whatever the number is, I don't see in the preliminary stuff I have that you're going to be able to determine with any reasonable measure that you've reached that, whether 210,000 pounds could be 2 million pounds. Mm-hmm. Because the data and the information, the harvest data, the collection data you have is disastrous.
Yes. I have a comment on that. The point is that
Mr. Neal,
we're using their data.
Yeah.
All right. So
whoa.
No, it's data. So the point is that you're using the same data that they're using to set the closure.
Now,
that you're using the exact same data that they're using. So yeah, if the data is bad, but that's the data that they're using. So you use their same data.
Now, federal data.
Yes.
Or state data.
It's federal data.
Okay. I'm referring to the state data.
There is no state data.
It's the same thing.
You're saying
broken out by state or broken out by Georgia.
Right. The table is what I'm referring to.
Yeah, that's federal
state
data. Yeah, that's the MREP system. And so you just use the MREP data. So it's the same data. I mean, you use the same data. But yeah, I agree with you. Data is questionable, but it's what's being used.
I guess at the point, why wouldn't you be supporting mandatory reporting?
It's not that I'm not supporting it. It won't work. You'll just get more bad information. I think it would be great if every person out here and every fisherman would come in and tell you every fish that they caught, you would have wonderful information, but it will not happen.
But, sir, follow up, Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Erskine.
We're in this position now, right? And we all seem to agree that it's poor data, federal, state, whatever has broken out, it's poor data. And we're forced to suggest management measures, or worse yet, have management measures imposed on the Commonwealth. Wouldn't we want to try and protect ourselves to better manage, you know, around that? It only benefits the recreational fishing community to provide that information. The incentive is there because you don't want to be in a position like this.
I agree. I just don't think you're going to get good information. I'm not disagreeing. That would be a great thing to have. But I don't believe you'll get correct information.
Let me throw an example out on that. Last year with striped bass, we have the spring fishery considered part of the coastal stock. I mean, no cost permit to participate in the spring fishery is required. It requires mandatory reporting. And the response has been very less than anemic. So they have a no-cost permit. We have a way to track them. They know mandatory reporting is required when you catch a striper during that spring season, and yet it almost never happens.
And I understand that example. It's very reasonable. But when the fishery closes, then they have nobody to blame, right? But themselves. That's what I don't understand. I mean, I guess...
That would be a 4 or 5 year benefit down the road. What I'm talking about today is what we can do for 2016. That would be a good thing to have, that information, but that information, it wouldn't help until 4 or 5 years down the road, you know, to collect all that information. But
understood. I think Mr. Ballard had a good point, and that was managed for the future as well.
Yeah, from my perspective, we're in a real hard spot here. We can't blame Georgia. We can't blame South Carolina. We can blame North Carolina. Well, we're equally as guilty as North Carolina. So the answer has to come from Virginia and North Carolina, or it's going to be imposed by the feds. And if we don't, sure as God made little green apples, we'll be back here next year, and we're going to be looking at something worse because we're going to have to pay back whatever we go over. Ultimately, what you're talking about is the answer, which is a state-by-state quota system and allocation on each by each state. Now, I believe that that's something Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission will do. And I think what you're saying is to do it kind of preemptively on the playing field that we would appreciate the most, that we would think is fair. That ain't necessarily how it ends up. So I applaud you for coming up with the concept, but I don't think it gets us away from the fact that what we're looking at right now is the feds absolutely breathing down our backs, and if we don't comply, I think that the pain from that is going to be worse than the pain of an early closure. That's my fear.
The fishing community doesn't agree with you.
As is their right. Mr. Cedron.
I just think the recreational fisher guys, and I'm in 2 or 3 different fishing organizations and stuff like that, is going to need to understand that, you know, we're complaining about inaccurate data, and I understand you reporting this stuff, but unless the people want to control everything, and that's what they should do, they're going to have to step forward and do something. And so if these guys who go fishing, the charter people, the recreational fishers, if they don't come forward, then we have to rely on faulty information, which is going to hurt everybody. And so they've got to understand that we got to put a system in place that they're going to have to report. And you know, I understand all that stuff, and a lot of people that hunt don't report what they shoot, stuff like that. But if the fishermen want us to go fight for them, we got to have some accurate data. And they're the guys that can do it. And that, I think the monkey needs to shift a little bit to help us do what you want to do.
Any other questions for Mr. Blow? Because I'd like to open up the floor to some other folks. Is that right, Wes?
Thank you.
All right. Yep. Please, sir. Lewis, do you have a point to make?
Quick one. I decided to hold off on some of the bad news until next month rather than dump it on you all at once. But
come on, give us it all.
In relation to some of what Wes said, and I agree with a lot of it, if we closed today for cobia, said we're closed until January 1, 2017, the season would only be extended to July 18th.
Coast what?
Federal waters.
No,
coast what?
Federal waters.
Coast what? In other words, that's how much credit our 120,000 pounds would buy everyone else. So, I mean, that's the best we could hope for, because the whole time North Carolina is catching fish.
All right, well, I want what's fair, I mean, that's core principle, but I also don't want to cut off our nose to spite our face, and I'll use a lot of other cliches along the way if you all need me to. Sir, please come forward. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jake Hiles. I run
Welcome.
The Chargers in Virginia Beach. I'd like to thank you guys for having me out here today and allowing me to speak. One thing that I wanted to address is you guys keep talking about data, how there's no data out there, how there's no reporting. This right here is every fish that I caught last year. This goes to the Northeast region. I'm required by law to report, and none of this data is used for cobia. Every cobia I caught is reported in here, but the Southeast region will not, the South Atlantic Fisheries Marine Council will not take this data. They don't use it. They don't talk to the Northeast region. All of my fisheries information is in there. I get surveyed nearly every day when I come in from fishing. But there's an on-the-dock Quantech surveyor there. They ask every single day what I caught, and as soon as I tell them that I was fishing inshore where I would be fishing for cobia, they don't want to hear it. They're not allowed to take that data. They're only allowed to report data from offshore.
I've heard that. That has changed.
Well, I mean, just in the last year. Last year, they weren't yep. talking.
Now, if that's changed in the last few months as the states have taken over the MRIP serving program from the feds.
This cobia closure is being based on 170 coastwide surveys. That's nothing. And they're extrapolating these numbers from how you get 700,000 pounds and change out of 170 surveys. That's just completely bogus. But I wanted to touch on a couple of things that, first off, you know, I'm not trying to pick apart Lewis, but Lewis says that catching and intercepting a cobia angler for a survey is very rare. It's very rare. How are we catching 700,000 pounds a year? You know, I don't understand that. If we have people out there that are giving surveys and it's very rare to intercept somebody that's catching a cobia, how are we catching 700,000 pounds a year? You also, on this chart, it said there was a 75% deviation for Georgia and a 39% deviation for Virginia. If those numbers are correct, on the low end, we were well within our ACL. On the low end of that, Georgia could be either, I think they had 67,000 pounds with a 75% deviation, so they caught somewhere between 15,000 pounds and 120,000 pounds. I mean, that's crazy. There's that, how those numbers are being used to regulate us and shut us down, I just don't get it. And I understand that none of you guys want this to happen. And I'm sure that we all understand that it's bad science. I wanted to point some of the things out. You guys had mentioned bucking the system and it causing, you know, effects for years to come. I don't think that we were represented very well by the SAFMC when they made this decision. And I know that with other fisheries, for example, black sea bass are regulated. They're all regulated by the three different, there's the Northeast, the ASFMC, and the SAFMC, and each one has different regulations on sea bass. Why are we not imploring the ASFMC to take emergency action to regulate cobia?
They don't have jurisdiction.
And there's nothing that we can do about it.
Not at this point. The South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council has, within the last week and a half, requested the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission join with them on a joint coastwide cobia management plan. That would have the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission having a direct say over inshore fisheries for cobia. And be careful what you ask for.
Right.
That does, however, allow for a state-by-state quota system like West Blow was just...
Of course.
Yes, but we're several years away from that, but I'm pretty convinced that's the way it's going to go.
Well, you know, I hear you guys saying that, you know, if we don't do this, then the next couple of years is going to get worse with cobia, and it's going to get worse. If we're closed at June 20th, it can't get much worse. You know, we're losing our entire cobia season as it is, and worrying about it getting worse, I'm not going to book. You know, I run about 100 trips a year where cobia are a target. And most of those trips are after June 20th. Mm-hmm. And kids don't even get out of school, which is when most of the cobia season is, and that's when most of our charters are. So, I mean, I don't understand how it could get any worse.
Well, couldn't one way. I'll make it simple.
Just close it forever for good.
Well, we raise the pirate flag, and we keep the fishery open till mid-July, and at the end of the year, the National Marine Fisheries Service calculated we went 200,000 pounds over what they thought we should have been allowed to catch, and we got to pay it back in 2017. That means no fishery.
Right.
None.
Well, I mean, essentially, I'm not speaking for everybody in the room here. I know that if we had no fishery, it would be just about the same as closing it on June 20th.
Don't like it any more than you do.
But, I mean, other than blocking the system, I don't know. I mean, I've thought about this a lot. I actually brought a lawyer here with me so that he could see what was going on. And we're talking about potentially trying to maybe sue them to see if we can get this overturned. But I mean, that's a huge process. It's incredibly expensive, and we have a lot of support with it, but that doesn't help anymore, you know. And if there was something that the state could do with this beforehand, it would save us from having to go through that whole process, you know. Another thing I wanted to touch on is in the SAFMC's calculations of how we got to that 700,000 pounds number, they said that we caught 300,000 pounds in August, and it blew over 20 miles an hour for like 20 days in August. I don't understand how they came to that number, but there has to be some way that we can go to the ASFMC and say, you guys' numbers are completely off. You know, there has to be some data pull out there that will show that we didn't catch 700,000 pounds last year, because I don't think that we did. I don't know how they came to that number. They're using 40 pounds as an average cobia for last year. That's not an average cobia. 40 pounds is a nice cobia, but the average one is probably closer to 25 pounds. You know, it's completely bogus data, and I don't understand why we're getting stuck with it.
Mr. Miner has a question.
Yeah, did you say the information you received was based on 170 surveys?
Yeah, that's it.
Where did you get that number from?
It was on the ASFMC website. Or the SAFMC website,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Ryan, can you help clarify this a little bit? Please step a little closer to the mic.
Yeah, going to the, if you look at the MRIP data, which is where they get a lot of this stuff,
yep.
There were 170 directed trip intercepts in the state of Virginia. In 2015. So there were 170 MRIP interviews in the state of Virginia where somebody said my primary target was cobia. That's what I was going for. I wouldn't know the exact number for the coast, but I think it's around 400. 400 trips where people said, you know, we were targeting cobia. Obviously, you know, we're talking about a scale of 700,000 pounds. It's probably not going to make people feel much better, but I guess for, you know, accuracy's sake, the Virginia number is 170. And that's what was used to get to the 720,000 pounds, the average weight of 34 pounds.
They also said that that 91% of the cobia in the state of Virginia were caught by private boats. Or coastwide, caught by private boats. I mean, there's no way that's even possible. That's completely unrealistic. The numbers that they're using are completely bogus and made up. I have no idea how you could even come to that number as a professional.
Well, make an observation. We ain't any happier than you are about the numbers. We aren't any more convinced about the numbers than you are. But the fact of the matter is, these are the numbers that we have to have. These are the numbers that we're stuck with.
Of course.
We can't change that. It doesn't change the calculation of what we're looking at the moment.
what I'm suggesting is that we figure out some way to get proper numbers. One of the ways is what's already out there through VTRs that are being forced to be submitted to the Northeast region currently. And every COVID I caught last year.
Jeff Allen?
Yep.
We hear you.
Yep.
That's all. Any other questions?
Mr. Erskine?
Are you in favor of mandatory reporting then?
I'm already mandatory reporting.
As a charter captain.
Yeah.
Right, but as a member of the industry, you'd be in favor of mandatory, but for everybody, not just yourself.
This is archaic. It's 2016. The fact that I have to fill, I'm actually supposed to fill out several of these every time that I fish. On a four-hour fishing trip, I'm supposed to fill out about 2 hours worth of paperwork and then go to a post office and mail it in. That is just beyond archaic. In 2016, I've got my phone in my pocket. There's no reason why I should not be able to get online, sign on to an app, do my catch reporting, and then whatever agency needs that data can take that data. I have absolutely no problem with that. But doing this,
aside from the technology of it, I understand, you know, it might be archaic. Are you in favor of the industry, the recreational fishery, mandatory reporting?
Absolutely. I'm already mandatory reporting.
Okay. Thank you.
Ryan, you stood up because you have something that you think is absolutely pertinent for us, I can tell. Will you please jump in?
Yeah. I don't. If you'll indulge maybe a little 4 or 5 minute speech, I can maybe give a little bit more background on the idea of mandatory reporting. I don't want to say I have an expertise, but my background is in, I've done research in comparing the MRIP survey to self-reported data that's come from an app. This was done down in Florida. It's been discussed on the Senate subcommittee floor for fisheries and oceans, which I think is headed by Marco Rubio. But you know, a lot of the thing that has, a lot of my knowledge that has come out of it was the snook fishery. So down in Florida, the common snook fishery is a rare fishery. I don't want to say cobia and snook are the same, but a similarity that they have is that they felt very underserved by the MRIP data set because they just weren't getting a lot of data. And so the Snook Game Fish Foundation, which is a sport fishing group down there, says, you know, what can we do about it? So they designed a smartphone app. And that's been up since 2013, and their data has been used. The length distribution of discarded fish, so released fish, has been used in their state-level stock assessments because Florida handles their most common snook caught in state waters. But I guess the point is, you know, we've had a lot of trouble with mandatory reporting for other fisheries, and I think the only way that it has a chance is if it has consensus and comes from the angler saying this is what we want to do. Because we're tired of being dependent on this MRIP data, which we feel has betrayed us time and time again. I can speak to the gentleman who has paper reporting. There's a program in the Gulf of Mexico called iSnapper, which was piloted with 16 or so charter boats, and in the years following, those charter captains self-recruited guys, other captains, to do it. It's gotten pretty good buy-in, and those guys, for headboat trips that could have 15, 20 anglers, they spend about 15 minutes compiling all the catch and trip information. So I would say that there are possible avenues for exploration. I don't know the extent to which we could get it done immediately, but, you know, if there is that interest and if that's what people want to do, there's a lot of people to talk to. There's a lot of cases where we could look at and say, yeah, we've had horrendous luck trying to do it in the state of Virginia. But it is possible to get a little bit better of a buy-in so that, you know, when we look at our MRIP data and says that for the 39 trips in Virginia where an MRIP interviewer saw that a cobia was caught, only two of them were charter trips. You know, if we have information at least coming to VMRC for all the charter trips, then we would at least be able to go to NOAA and say, hold on, obviously there was more than just these couple of trips. Here's our information regarding our charter mode, because South Carolina has a logbook program, and that was used in the most recent cobia stock assessment. So I know that Westblow has concerns about the usability of this data, and quite frankly, in most cases, it's not very usable. But there are at least a couple examples where you can point to and say this data has been used in a stock assessment, maybe not because it's perfect, but because it is the best available science. And I think what's frustrating everyone is that the best available science doesn't seem very good. You know, this might be a situation where we could could get something that's a little better, but
for down the road.
Yeah.
All right. Let me open the floor. George? Let's try to speed it up a little bit here and hit some points that haven't been made, if you could.
I'll try, but we've been sitting here 4 hours, so give us our chance, okay?
We've been sitting here since 9:30.
I know. My name's George Head. I live in Yorktown, Virginia. Can I start by briefly stating for somebody that had to leave that took off work today to come to the meeting, Tim Haddock is a resident of Pocosin. He's a school teacher. He gets 3 days of leave, paid leave a year. He took one of his days to come to this meeting, showed up at lunchtime, sat here till 4 o'clock, and had to go get his young children off the bus. He's moved here from Pennsylvania. He's a recreational fisherman, strictly. He's been fishing in Virginia for 17 years. Fishes with his family, primarily his two young children and his wife. He is a big expense with a new boat that they've recently purchased. And Kobe is their primary target, and he felt it important enough to come to this meeting and ask if I would share that because he had to leave. I am also a school teacher. I also get 3 days of paid leave a year. I took one of them today to come to this meeting because I think it's that important. I've been a recreational fisherman my entire life in Virginia. I just turned 50 years old. I've been a charter captain for the last 8 years. I'm going to read off of my notes here just so I don't get too sidetracked. I've been targeting cobia for over 25 years as the primary species that I fish for in the Chesapeake Bay. Since I've become a charter captain in the last 8 years, I have customers that come from states all over, primarily up and down the East Coast, to experience our incredible cobia fishery. I have recently, in the last 2 months, purchased a second boat for my charter business. It was a significant investment. Is over a year's salary for my teacher's salary that I put into this new investment. I am relying on the cobia charters to pay my expenses that our family has incurred. I have a great respect and passion for the cobia fishery. I'm an advocate for conservation research. I support regulations to ensure the future of our fishery. I've been the top tagger of cobia in the state almost every year. I've received a conservation award from CCA regarding my efforts involving cobia. I've provided many boxes of DNA cobia samples to VIMS for research purposes. I support Wes's idea on regulations, a possible boat limit, increasing our minimum size limit. I realize from tonight's discussion that that's not going to help our cause a whole lot this year, but I do support common sense regulations for our fishery to protect it for the future. I usually don't get involved in the politics side of fishing. I trust the agencies to do what's right for the fishermen and for the fishery. My goal of coming to this meeting is for VMRC to oppose the federal recommendation to close down our 2016 season. I spent as much time as I possibly could in the last month since we learned of this in February researching the data that is available. It's been presented, and much of it is very troubling. I think it's very unreliable and has a high probability for error and inconsistencies. Almost everyone that I have spoken with, scientists from VMRC, VIMS, a lot of people, I haven't had a single person tell me that they have any kind of confidence in the data that we are going by to shut down this fishery. I feel like the proposed closure, as Wes spoke to earlier, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating, but I think it's a big deal that they're placing the majority of the burden of this closure on Virginia anglers as opposed to all of the other South Atlantic states that are involved. Primarily due to those two factors, the inconsistent, unreliable science that we're dealing with that I think we have a very strong argument about, and the majority of this burden being placed on our anglers in Virginia, I think VMRC needs to stand up, and I think we've got plenty of argument to reject the federal recommendation to shut down our state waters June 20th. Instead, I would encourage you guys to come up with some reasonable expectations and regulations for Virginia for the future for our cobia fishery. I've also spoken with many recreational anglers in Virginia, and the majority of them have no idea of what's going on. I feel like we were blindsided with this a month ago, and I think we would have even more support here if, you know, but most of the people I don't think are aware of what we're facing out of all the anglers in Virginia. I would also like to briefly note a couple things on the slides. Maybe, Lewis, could you get me back to a couple of the slides? The statistic that bothers me the most, and I know, Mr. Bull, that you're probably...
tell me what you're looking for.
The slide that showed the, I guess it was the directed trips. Do you have that? I was at Thursday's meeting, and in 2009, for example, that was the highest year of directed trips toward Cobia. There was 102,000. That's actually not the slide that I'm looking for, because that's the whole coast. In 2009, there was 102,000 directed trips in the state of Virginia towards Cobia. 3 years later, in 2012, there was 30-something thousand directed trips, a third of what there was in 2009. What happened to those 60-some thousand directed trips in a three-year period? 3 years later, in 2015, we're back up to 90-some thousand directed trips. If you do the simple math, we have about a 100-day cobia season. It starts about the beginning of June, and it tapers off in September. If you factor in all of the weekdays, the poor weather, the good weather, that's an average of 1,000 boats a day directly targeting cobia in Virginia. I have not talked to a single person that thinks that is possibly reasonable. When we're sight fishing, we're covering 100 miles a day. Cobia fishing is a pretty isolated fishery. They're not up in the rivers. They're not way out in the ocean in Virginia. The guys are fishing from the mouth of the bay to Windmill Bar, the 20-some mile area from one side of the bay to the other. We network with people all over the state, out of Virginia Beach, Cape Henry, Eastern Shore, Windmill Bar.
George?
Just give me one more second. I'm almost done.
There are a lot of other people that want to have sex.
I understand.
At some point, we're all going to leave.
I understand. If we take that one factor out of this equation, that there's 1,000 boats a day in Virginia directly targeting cobia, if we take that one factor out, those numbers all disappear. They're saying that in 2015, we went 400% over what we were in 2014. The numbers just... I'll stop there, but the numbers just, they don't make sense. And for us to lose our livelihood and our investments based on science that's unrealistic, I'm just asking you guys to do whatever you can to fight for the fishery.
All right, so.
Please state your name for the record.
Okay. I am Chandler Hogg. I run a charter boat. If I can ask a question. So it takes a month
and a half for
that.
Please address the commission. I don't want to get this in a back and forth with staff.
Okay.
If you want to do that, you can do that after hours.
No, that's fine. I was trying to think outside the box. Okay, so we are the last to receive the fish. So if we close June 20th, do we have the possibility of reviewing all the catches of that year? And while we still have the fish up here, and we have not reached our quota because it's shared the whole coastwise, are we able to open up for a second season and use what quota has not been used because it is shared all up and down the East Coast, and we haven't been allowed our fair share at it? That's the only thing I'm going to say. I was trying to think outside the box. I have been a charter boat captain for 25 years. I've seen this board turn over, and I appreciate everything that you do for us.
Thank you. I'll just say I find it unlikely that the other states won't land their landings. I doubt that we'll have any extra to reopen the season.
Right, but if possible.
Please come forward, sir.
Hello, my name is Randy Richardson. I run Wallace's Bait and Tackle. I'm not a charter captain. Closing the season will very, very detrimental to my business. Yep. June the 20th will shut me down. I do $174,000 last year. $15,000 of it was eels. $6,000 was chum. So my business, a third of it is based on cobia season. Come June the 20th is about when we're getting started. We had a tournament last year with 37 boats, cobia tournament. Out of 37 boats, we had 12 that caught fish. I left 25 boats for no fish. So like you said, I'm not going to go into numbers things. Everybody's going to beat that dead horse. I was hoping y'all would look at this situation and what this is going to come to. I've even bought a 31-foot boat to have a charter business, but I'm going to hold with that. My season is very June, July, August, September. After that, there's no stripers. There's no flounders. Y'all have killed the stripers. The commercial has. That's a different category. But I have no other business right now. Cobia season, closing it, will put me down. That business has been here since 1958. I've been here 4 years. If it closes June the 20th, I'm closing June the 21st.
We understand.
I mean, y'all have to. You said earlier, got to be fair to everybody.
Correct.
You said earlier, don't make no hasty decisions. I'm getting kind of emotional. Sorry. So keep that in mind. Keep us open. Close it in July, late July. This works something, whatever we got to do. But like the other gentleman said, we can't let Carolina, their season's ending. Ours is just beginning. So with that, that's okay. All I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace.
I'm Josh Jordan. I'm the owner of Captain Jordan Studios out of Pocosin, Virginia. I was born and raised there my whole life. Unlike a lot of the gentlemen behind me and the other speakers from today, I don't make a living off catching cobia. I actually base my living off the fact that these guys go out there and catch cobia, and they've made it such a popular recreational fishery. As a small business owner, I try and get as much as I can whenever I can get it upon what it is. That allows me to have a pretty good relationship with my customers, and I can look around the room behind me from where I was sitting, even with the block view, and point out each individual in this room that's been a customer of mine, and I know them by name. I talk to them fairly often on the phone, and I will say honestly, 85% of the work they have purchased from me throughout the years, in one way or another, has been a cobia. Whether that's a t-shirt design, an original painting or drawing, a decal, anything. It's all centered around that cobia. And these guys have a lot more to lose than I do myself. My overhead costs are nil compared to the cost of their boats, marina fees, fuel, and et cetera, et cetera. While Wes was speaking, someone made the response that, do you want us to risk going against the federal commission? My reaction to that is absolutely. Each and every one of us that are business owners and small business owners in here today take a risk every year in what we do for a living. And it's not always necessarily because of the money. It's because it's something that we love to do. And I'm very passionate about it. And if I have to stop doing what I'm doing because of losing money, it's really going to put me in a bad way. So I hope that y'all can take that into consideration. It's not just necessarily the numbers. And it's obviously, it's going to be bad if I love to catch cobia, just like everybody else here. I had the biggest one in the state in 2012. That's going to be unfortunate if we can't go fishing for cubby anymore. It's something that I have a passion for, and so is everyone else. But for me, it won't be the end of the world. It won't put me at a, you know, the business aspect and the potential loss to myself, my family, and all the other business owners, and even the recreational guys who invest hundreds and thousands of dollars in this every year. I'd hate to see it risk them, and then Carolina and other states, they're not taking the hit. You know, it's unfortunate, but I just want to thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Mike, please come forward. We're going to take two more people. Keep in mind that there will be a public hearing next month here on whatever the final decision is going to be here.
I'll be very brief. I have a note card.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Mike Avery. I'm both a recreational fisherman and a charter captain, and I'm with the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association that tries to represent recreational anglers. I want to endorse Wes Bowe's recommendation that the commission and Virginia essentially secede from the union and buck the federal government for the 2016 season. Wes is right. We've got to stand up for what's right. We've got to fight for what's right. What's being done to Virginia by our southern neighbors is unfair, and we need to fight for that. Let's cross 2017 and 2018 when we get to there. If we have to pay something back, we do have time to work on the amendment that's coming out for the update to the FMP for Cobia. They're working on that. We have time to adjust for that. And I say that I agree with Wes for the following reasons. First, the zone split that happened that gave Florida their own zone and a higher quota than the rest of the Atlantic coast is just justly unfair. And I understand and I read how it's done, but I don't agree with it, and it's just not right and it's not fair. Second, when this closure was announced for 20 June, why was it not done in a rolling manner? These fish migrate up the coast. Why was the closure not done in a rolling manner and give the states their shot and open and close the season in a rolling manner? That just seems to be the common sense, the thing to do, and it was totally ignored. Why? Because we have no representation on the South Atlantic Council, and that was talked about. The accountability measures that are put in the FMP appear to be draconian. There are so many other accountability measures we could put in place beyond a closure. Adjust the season sizes. We're talking about that now, and our anglers support that, and we should do that. But going straight to a closure is not acceptable. We also question the data. The low number of intercepts simply does not equal what they're telling us that we caught. And so for those reasons, I ask that the commission consider between now and April 26th. That we intentionally go out of compliance with the federal government. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Avery. Who wants the last word? I see people pointing at Bill. Sorry, Counselor. Seems to be unanimous consensus that Bill's the last word. Hi, Bill.
How you doing? I'm Bill Gore.
Hold on 1 second, Bill. What, bless? 5 hours. Bill, will you let him have a word, and then I'll give you the last word? Come for it, sir. 5 hours. Where'd you come from? Roanoke? Shenandoah. Are there Cobia? They're Cobia in Shenandoah?
Shenandoah County, always all the way up in the point there.
What's your name, sir?
Donald Bowers. Like several others in here, I'm a school teacher. Part-time farmer, licensed charter boat captain. Cobia from first week of June till Labor Day, 98% of my charters the past 3 years have been cobia. Most of my clients come from up home. We don't have fish like that. This is the draw. We all know that. I'm not going to say anything that hadn't been said already other than Wes Bowe has outlined it greatly. I recommend everything that he said. like George said, we've all got a big investment in this, huge investment, families to raise, the equipment that we've put into these boats to target the cobia, only the cobia. I mean, it's, like Randy said, his business, our business, it'll be devastating to my family. I don't think 1 year will probably do it, you know. 1 year will probably do it. The thing about bucking the system that we said, and it just dawned on me there, it's something if you're bucking the system and you're wrong, but we're right. We've got so much ammunition to talk, you know, behind us. Data, inaccurate data. I appreciate y'all giving me a chance to talk, you know.
You drove all that way. You deserve a chance to have a say.
Thank you.
Bill, you want to have the last word?
All right. Okay,
please state your name for the record.
It's Bill Gorn with Boat Up Lures. What I've done for the last month is work with recreational and commercial fishermen from North Carolina to Virginia, trying to understand the last stock assessment, peer reviews, everything. I'm not going to sit here and talk to you about the data. There are options for the future. But I can tell you, if you lower boat limits and go along with the closure itself, it's downhill from there. That's based upon the current ABCs of coming up with the ACL. So it'll get low, because they're using a 10-year average. So you catch 500,000 pounds for the next 3 years, which it'll take to get a full season. But even the full season, you see we break it 50% of the pound. Sorry. So, what do? The framework plan is you go to the South Atlantic Marine Council, and one, you should have equal representation, whether it be the Mid-Atlantic or the state of Virginia itself. And I think the root cause is with Amendment 18 and Amendment 20, which did the zone splits in the ACL. There was clear lack of representation in data and in representation in votes. Florida shouldn't have 3 votes over Virginia's fish or share of fish. On top of that, you asked about migratory groups, why were there zone splits and tagging research. One thing, though, in Amendment 20, they actually define migratory groups. They say it's 2 groups that may or may not be genetically connected. So genetics doesn't mean anything. So it was regulatory. It wasn't soundly based on genetics. Even so, it was on a very low sample size from Virginia. If you look across the board for Virginia, the catch intercepts at 3 for a period of 20 years, for shore-based, 3 from the 80s to 2011 for charter boats. The last guy was right. You do have a leg to stand on. If you were to not comply and go over, it's already being worked on to be fixed anyways, because they see the problem. But under what we're at right now, it will not get better. It's mathematical. If every other year we're going over, every other year you're getting lower, getting forced to close sooner. By all accounts, this closure date should stay in effect for, maybe not the date, but a shortened season for 3 to 4 years. I'm happy to meet with you afterwards. There's tons more. If you want references, citations, I'm working with Michelle Duvall and Rob. I do have an open question still with Rob. I hope he would answer it, because I think it could lead to an emergency measure with NOAA as far as MREP, and telling him that data would be 3 to 5 times higher for 2015's catch totals. And that's pretty major to know that the same year of a zone split. I don't think the battle's with North Carolina, Georgia, or South Carolina. I think it's with having representation, Virginia, having representation on a council that dictates, you know, its public trust. But, again, I really do welcome a meeting. I'll drive 2 more hours up here, meet with you individually, wherever you're from. Because I tell you, it's interesting. And you'll feel a lot better about the situation of bucking the system. and I think it's going to work itself out, because the way that we got here was wrong. It just, from a regulatory standpoint, I think if there's three voting Virginia members on that council, it would have been different. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Appreciate it.
Mr. Bull, we wanted to touch on the fact that it was that the way that they came to this decision was through Max and Stevens, and they acted illegally in the way that they did it.
I understand that everybody would like us to be here till 10 o'clock tonight, and everybody wants to say a word about anything and to vent about the federal law, the federal agencies, the South Atlantic Council, who made the decision on splitting this between Florida and Georgia and up the coast. Well, we'd be here for, heck, we'd do 3 or 4 days here. We'd still not have everybody have a full sense of everything they want to say. But the fact of the matter is that I wanted you to know that we usually don't, I usually don't, the chairman usually does not open up the floor here for extensive comments on what is a request for a public hearing. So I've granted you guys 2.5 hours here to be able to vent your spleens. I hope you feel a little better. But I wanted you also to understand here, we're not the enemies. We're not disagreeing with you. But the fact of the matter is that there's a difficult decision that needs to be made, whether we like this data or not, or whether we like this situation or not. I will note, before I ask Mr. Neal here for any final thoughts that he has, it's easy to sit here and say, yeah, we'll raise the pirate flag. We'll tell them all to take a leap. We'll worry about what happens afterwards. But you know what? What happens afterwards doesn't necessarily impact just the cobia fishery, because these are people making decisions on a lot of other species up and down the East Coast. Keep that in mind when you want us to raise the pirate flag. Mr. Neal.
All right. We're going to go to public hearing, so this is so that's going to be it. I would word the public hearing a little different in that we have increase in the size limit. I would maybe word that as a modification of size limit. That would just give us the option to talk about doing the slots, that kind of thing, one fish over 50 inches or something like that. So it's just an increased size limit, adoption of modifying the size limit. All right, that would be the only thing with that. Between now and then, you've given me examples of ASMFC states going out of compliance with ASMFC. I'd like to know examples of states going out of compliance with SAFMC or NOAA that are not state-regulated species, i.e. red snapper in the Gulf. What's being done to those states that have decided to raise the pirate flag, because they're doing it, and they've done it. Also, I was a member of the highly migratory species NOAA for 4 years, and we talked sharks every freaking year, and every freaking year we had a representative from Louisiana saying, well, this is what we're going to do in our state waters. And so for 4 years, I don't know what was done to Louisiana other than I think all we did was basically say, well, in federal waters, you have to do this. And vessels having federal permits had to do this wherever they fished. But we never came down on Louisiana and said they had to do this for their – it was a commercial shark fishery in their state waters. They had a significant fishery. So, you know, saying that New Jersey got shut down for their tog or New York with their flounder, they're different things. I want to know, with an agency that only has regulatory powers in federal waters, what's happened to the red snapper? What's happened to those states in the Gulf that are basically doing what these gentlemen are talking about doing with cobia?
Right.
And that's
definitely
it.
Look into that.
But other than that, I would move to go to a public hearing.
Second.
There's a motion by Mr. Neal to have a public hearing in April on these issues. Second by Mr. Miner. Mr. Bell.
One other data request for staff for the public hearing would be that date calculation under the recommended plan, what that would be, whether we're even able to get that data from NOAA. We might want to explore that before analyzing it.
210,000-pound date.
Yeah, what the closure date would be.
Any discussions on the motion? Call a question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. And that motion passes unanimously. Is there anything else for the good of the order?
This will be discussed at the FinFish meeting in April.
April 18th.
Which you all are welcome to come to, and it will be up. Up.
No, I haven't said it yet.
Okay. 18th, and this will be a public hearing at next month's commission meeting, where you officially can publicly speak.
Okay, meeting's adjourned. Thank you for your patience, everyone, and your civility, and for taking your hats off.